Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here.
Welcome back to the Native Ways Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
And I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today we're going to give you a little recap, kind of what's been going on with us as far as hunting and digging. We're going to talk about some content we're working on right now and then some upcoming stuff. And then,
appreciate everybody following. If you're watching this, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, as always. If you're on our Facebook groups, we appreciate all the engagement we've gotten there recently. Appreciate y'all. Native Ways Podcast on all platforms. That's TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, obviously. So make sure y'all give us a follow, give us a like. Just keep us engaged, and we'll keep you engaged as well.
Yep. Yeah, another thing, quick shout-out to Dancing Dogs Ranch. They've been kind of supporting us lately, trying to work with them a little bit. There's more to come with that. Another shout-out to Texas Cash. We really appreciate them. Y'all be hearing from them soon, so stay tuned on that. And before we get into it, one more deal. If you're listening, please make sure that you're either liking our content on Spotify, Apple, whatever it is. Subscribe to us, review the podcast. I mean, that's the only way we know that this stuff's actually getting out to people and that y'all are enjoying it. So it helps us a lot if y'all take the minute to do that. I know most people don't think to do it or whatever, but we do appreciate if you do it. But with that being said, let's get into it, Christian.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start off with the deer leases. Is that where we're going with this?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, just recently, I'm sure that y'all might know, y'all might not know, we got a deer lease in Knox County, which is kind of north of Abilene by about an hour and a half or so. Either way, we just recently went out there. We got a bunch of stands set up, a bunch of feeders, kind of got to know the area well, kind of got to know the environment, the climate, kind of what we are going to expect in the coming season. So, I mean, we started the trip going up there not really knowing much about it other than, you know, our boss, Adam, you know, the owner of the company we work for, he's the one that got us on the lease. He kind of already knew about it, how it was going to be and kind of how the environment was up there, but we didn't know nothing.
Yeah.
I just knew what Abilene looked like. You know, I know what West Texas looks like, but we have no idea. I've never been in this area before because when I go up to Lubbock, I don't pass through there. Yeah. So I don't know. Anyways. So yeah, we kind of had an idea of how I was going to look, went up there and, you know, our section of the lease is, it's on a ranch that's actually, you know, pretty big.
Yeah.
It's just a smaller section that's cut off from it. But the actual property itself is huge.
Yeah, it's close to 120,000 acres.
Right. So, I mean, we're on this one piece of it, and it's kind of a different layout throughout the whole entire place. So, you get on the north side of it. I'll start from north and go down south. So, the north side is kind of where we were more drawn to look for Audad, potentially, you know, something like that, because it's more canyons, a little bit higher elevation. Got a little bit more river runouts and washes and stuff like that. So we were thinking, you know, there's Audad that we know are on this place further west.
Yeah.
There could be potentially somewhere we're at east. Anyway, so we were like, well, we're going to target Audad in this spot. That's going to be our main spot. So if you haven't seen what it looks like, you know, you can relay all this on our YouTube channel. You can go and watch that video and you can see exactly what we're talking about. And it'll give you a better, you know, image of what we're saying.
Yeah.
But anyways, so we set up a 4x4 feed pin there. Sorry, not 4x4. They're 16-foot panels. We used four panels. 16. That's what I meant. When I said four, I meant four panels. Anyways, so we set up those feed pins. We got everything set up there as far as cameras and, you know, the blinds, which we're using pop-ups for most of these blinds because this is kind of like a last-minute thing put on us. Not typically something that we would you know, strictly hunt from as a pop-up, but with the time given, the expenses that we had to go through, you know, we're making it work with what we got.
Yeah, we had like 2 weeks notice, not even, like literally less than 2 weeks, and we had to be up there setting stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, I set up a little 4x4 blind just, you know, in the split of the moment with what material that I could get, and that thing was a hoss, to say the least. Use 3/4-inch plywood for all the, you know, the siding and everything and the lathing or whatever. And 2x4s for the rest of it, just the framing, and that thing was heavier than I was expecting.
Yeah, it's heavy.
And that was a chore. You'll see that in the video as well, but either way. So, kind of going back to how that's laid out. So, the north side, you got more of canyons going down, you know, a little bit more south of that. Kind of in the middle of the property, it starts to get a little bit lower in elevation. You get some little mesquite bottoms, you know, mix them with some cedars, of course. It's a lot of cedar up there. Not any big trees, really. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest tree that might be on that place is probably like 8 foot tall. I mean, maybe a little bit taller than that. I might be exaggerating. But, you know, that just kind of puts you in perspective of what it looks like. It's really just mesquites and cedars and occasional, you know, scrub brush and cactus, stuff like that. So, deserty terrain is really what you would kind of say. Anyway, so middle of the property, you got these washes, some real good bedding areas, places like that. And kind of what we were drawn to, I would say, the most, because it reminded us most of back home. You know, if I look at the spot, I tend to know where it looks good for deer to stay and kind of hold, or how they'd feel comfortable. But, you know, we've been seeing deer all over that place in spots that we wouldn't expect to see deer. But either way, so that's how the middle spot's laid out, you know, those bottoms and stuff like that. And then going down south, it kind of continues that down elevation. It's kind of like in a dip, but it kind of slightly goes up to the south property line. Anyway, that's kind of where all the creeks and rivers form on the fence line, or they come down to. And it's kind of more like the north side, you know, less hilly, but still more kind of open and stuff like that. So a couple bluffs here and there on that side, and then it's kind of the same way throughout it. It's just a long, narrow strip, and it's 4,500 or so acres, I think.
Yeah, so north side starts out real canyoness. The river starts up there and works its way south, and then about middle of the property where we start getting into the mesquite and cedar flats that look more like stuff here, where there's kind of some bedding type, look what I would call like little bedding areas, you know, flats on the river and stuff that look really good. That's where the rivers and creeks kind of meet up and start to split, and then they carry down in elevation down south toward the south side, south stand, and those canyons kind of kick up again there, because south of us there's another kind of canyon range that stretches to the border of the property, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of erosion heading down to the south side. Basically it all runs downhill,
right,
toward south, north south. Tons of tanks on it. I don't know, we've probably found 4 or 5 different tanks that we could easily duck hunt,
right? I think 3 of them for sure are holding water that we've seen, you know, besides the troughs and stuff that are out there, but, you know, that ain't gonna work for ducks.
Yeah.
So the one on the north side of the property is kind of what we are looking more at as far as holding birds. There's a lake that's not too far north of where we're at too. I don't know. I think it's probably 5 minutes down the road. So there's a big, you know, spot where birds can hold. And then as they're coming south, because that's to the north of us, as they're coming south, you know, I figured that, you know, some will stop in and just hang out. Some might even find it attractive and stay there, you know. And we might be able to get birds to hold in the spots that we're looking at as far as the ponds go.
Yeah.
And even on the rivers, too. If it gets cold enough up there, I mean, there's been rumors that once it freezes over, everything locks up and those rivers
stack up.
You know, kind of stack up with birds, just because that's the only stretch of water, especially in the past couple of years. You know, we've had those ice storms and stuff like that. And that's kind of how the birds are used to up north, where they're coming from anyways. Once they start, stuff starts freezing over, you know, they can't eat, they can't swim, they're not going to stay there. But they find an open patch, you know, that keeps them at least for however long it takes for them to, you know, get comfortable to go off again and keep continuing to migrate. So,
yeah. Yeah, it looks really good. And then, so I guess we'll start north to south, kind of talk what we've been seeing. That north stand, so the management regimen out there is pretty particular as to how we can harvest deer. But the north stand has been the only stand that I think we've seen anything that we can actually shoot off of.
Yeah.
There's been a couple bucks coming in there that are management deer, for sure. Then as it carries down, the next stand below that, bow spot.
Mm-hmm.
Not hardly any deer at this spot, which it really is a spot I thought would have been really good for deer. It's kind of a flat with, you know, a couple creeks meeting. and it's on the north side. Like, it's really the first kind of meadowy type flat on that north stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But the deer just haven't been there, but it's loaded up with pigs, and he's got one pig on camera that probably pushed 300 pretty easy.
Yeah, dude, so we got 16-foot panels, and they're 50 inches tall, and this pig is probably, like, a little over half of that panel in height.
Yeah, maybe even more.
Yeah.
He's very large.
He could very easily stand up and jump over if he really wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
He's huge.
He's a big one. But then carrying down, we get into Adrian's spot. He's seen a couple decent bucks, a lot of does.
Mm-hmm.
We can't shoot any does out there. Then mine and Christian's stands are kind of adjacent with each other as far as north and south, but they're spread out, I think, about a mile apart, east and west. I've got a couple bucks coming in, a ton of turkeys, a ton of pigs. I think that's all I'll say is coming into mine.
I mean, there's some bigger deer, I guess you could say, that are coming in as well. Which I don't know if we're going to speak on that or not.
Yeah,
but
we'll keep that non.
Either way. So there's really a vast majority of different species of animals out feeling comfortable on the place that I kind of wasn't expecting. I mean, I knew that there would be animals on the place, but I didn't think that there would be as many, I guess, as there is, as far as when it comes to, like, birds and even small game, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I knew the deer were going to be there. I knew there was going to be pigs just because of what everybody said. But, I mean, there's a bunch of rabbits, you know, a bunch of rabbits, cottontails and jackrabbits. Got a bunch of quail, which is cool to see. You know, around here we used to have a bunch. But kind of the fire ants and, you know, different other things, drought and stuff like that, that just killed them all. Which we've seen a few recently. They're kind of making a little comeback, I guess you could say, but we've seen a bunch of them up there. And I mean, it's just, there's just kind of animals everywhere, really, in a way. You don't see them all, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because you get your camera set up and you're like, man, there's freaking stuff coming in all day long. And you drive around out there and it's wide open. You don't see anything. I mean, the first time we went out there, which was, what, September? Or is it August?
No, it was in September.
It was like mid-September, I think, is when we first went up there, and we were driving around, and I was like, man, I don't see anything.
Yeah.
I was sitting there like, dude, I don't know how this is going to go, but just the amount of deer that we've seen, which was probably two.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think this is going to pan out to be very good. And, you know, sure enough, we gave it a week, gave it 2 weeks, and those deer had found those, you know, feed locations, and we're starting to see what we couldn't see driving around.
Yeah. A lot of deer. And a lot of very good young deer. Mm-hmm. The further south we go, the quality kind of increases. Actually, so Christian and I have been there twice. Everybody else has only been up there once. And the last time Christian and I went up, we set up another feed pen on the southeast side, which is, we still haven't even touched the southeast side of this place, really. We just, we found a spot that looked good on Onyx, pulled in there, and smacked a stand in. And that night, we got on camera a really, really good, at most 3.5-year-old deer.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett is calling him 2027 or something like that, because that's when he wants to shoot him. But he's gonna be a stud.
Yeah, Garrett has just about all the names you can think of.
Yeah, yeah. Deer names are something that people
just,
kind of,
yeah, it just comes natural to him, I guess.
But yeah, everybody else, you know, they're seeing deer. Oh, yep, there's that one. You know, he's got these characteristics, blah, blah, blah. Garrett's over here. Oh, that one there, that's Michael Jordan. Because the way he jumps the fence.
Yeah.
Gets in that feed pen real good. But anyway, so we got a really good young buck on the south side. Then the furthest south we go, Garrett's got a couple of really good young deer on camera. Christian, we don't know what he's had on camera because...
Oh, yeah. Let me go ahead and tell you about this. So, I've had the curse of the ranch is kind of what you could say.
Yeah.
So, I set up my stand. You know, I don't remember what the first problem was. I remember there was another problem. But either way. So, my camera, I get it. I have a spy point camera. Not trying to drop any names, but this is what I'm using. It was one of the LTE micros or whatever it's called. Like, I set it up on the tree. I got it elevated where I want it. I had a little solar panel that I brought that I got for it. That was the same brand. So everything should work fine.
The cows had turned it.
Yeah. So the camera got turned probably the second day that it was up. I mean, the first day I got a picture and it was cow and it was like perfectly fine, looked good. And then the next picture is it's pointed in the middle of the sky. And I mean, I wired it to this mesquite and I used the strap that it comes with. So I didn't really think anything of it. But I mean, the cows absolutely demolished our cameras on multiple locations. And we were just kind of fed up with it. So this last time, well, I guess I could say I went to go fix the camera. And when I went up to it, it had holes all in the sensor that you use, you know, that it uses to sense movement and take the picture. Well, there's just holes all in it. So I was like, I don't know what in the world happened here. Like, the cow didn't do it. So I picked it off the tree. I looked at it. Well, only thing that we could come to conclusion was a woodpecker, you know, saw that glare on that, thought it was a bug. Maybe there's a bug on it. And, you know, the woodpecker just went to town. And
went to town.
He just went to town on that thing. And, I mean, there was holes all up in it. It looked like somebody shot it with birdshot. And he was, you know, there's it's just no use to it now. Can't even use it. So I went ahead and trashed it, obviously. And we set up another camera.
Yeah.
And this was Richard's camera.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there. I'll tell the story, I guess. You can tell the story about, you know.
The
setup.
Yeah.
Anyways, we get that camera. We're like, all right, I got another camera on this pond. Let's go get that one. We'll put it over here. You know, maybe you can actually see what's coming to your stand for the past month. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's go do that. So we set it up. And our set it up on the tree, you know, get it to the right angle. And then I guess Richard can take it over from here and tell you exactly what happened on that.
Yeah, so we set it up. And anybody that uses SpyPoint, the one thing I don't like about them is the amount of time it takes them to actually connect. Like, it takes them a second to get signal and connect. But get it set up, everything goes green, it's good. You know, all the lights are holding steady. So it's like, cool. So we move along, go to my camera, because my camera had been turned by cows. Get it fixed, and that evening I was getting pictures from my stand, but nothing from Christian's. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird. Like, I hadn't even gotten the test picture I took. So I was like, well, we'll get it overnight and then go back and look at it in the morning and see, you know, if nothing happens between now and then. Maybe it's just trying to send pictures right now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, nothing happened overnight. So we go back to the stand the next morning and pull up to the camera, and it's running through like its setup cycle. And I was like, oh, that's not good. So open it up, turn it off, like reset it. And it wouldn't get out of the setup mode. So I call SpyPoint while we're sitting there. And I get on the phone with the guy. And I'm like, hey, this is what's going on, yada, yada, yada. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, do you have the camera with you? And I was like, well, I'm explaining to you what's happening with the camera. So, yes, I have the camera with me. And he's like, okay. Well, what it needs is a firmware update. And I'm like, okay, how do I do that? Like, what do I need to do? And he's like, okay, you're going to need to give me your email. Which he had my email. Or he asked me to confirm my email. I was like, okay, so confirm it. And he's like, I'm going to send you the update. And I was like, cool. And he's like, do you have the SD card? And I was like, yeah, I have the SD card. I have the camera. And he's like, okay, you're going to need a computer. And I was like, I don't have a computer. I'm at our deer lease. Hmm. But I have my phone and a card reader. Can I use it that way or what? He's like, oh, no, you've got to use a computer. And I was like, well... I was like, is this something my wife can do? Because at the moment in time, I'm thinking that she just has to, you know, something has to be verified in the email or something, and they can send it straight to the camera, and it can, you know, put in a new update.
Right.
I'm not techie. And he goes, oh, yeah, your wife can do it. I was like, great. I was like, send the email. And he's like, does she have the SD card? And I said, no, I just told you I have the SD card. And he's like, oh, well, take it to your wife. I'm like, dude, I'm 4 hours from my wife right now. And you want me to take the SD card to her? And he's like, yeah, just take it to her and let her do it. And I was like, the problem is not that I can't do the update myself. The problem is I don't have a computer, and my wife is 4 hours away from me. I don't need my wife to do the update for me because I physically can't. And he's like, oh, well, just take her the SD card, and she can bring it back to you. I was like, dude, you are not understanding this. That is an 8-hour round trip. And he was like, oh, I get it now. Mm. And he's like, well, let me see if I can send it to the camera. I was like, where was that option 5 minutes ago? Mm. So anyway, he tries to send it to the camera, and I don't know.
Yeah, don't know. The rest is pretty much history at this point. We don't know what happened. Cameron ended up dying, so plan is that Garrett and Richard are going to go up there tomorrow. They got to fill some feeders anyway, so they're going to go ahead and pull the SD card, see if it's been taking pictures at all, and then go from there. But I got another camera that we're going to set up over there, and hopefully I can figure out before, you know, actually go up there to try to that hunt and kill something that I'll know what's coming in.
Yeah.
I would hate to shoot a smaller deer than what I could have. But, you know, it is what it is. We'll see.
But yeah, so far, I mean, it's an interesting place. I'll tell some more stories about it here in a minute. But there's a saying that Adam has for this place. It's called Broke in Blank Town. And that rained to be true the first weekend we went up there. I mean, everything was going smooth, and everybody had been kind of thinking the same thing that I was thinking. I was like, man, you're gonna break that curse.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, that did not happen.
Mm.
We made it about an hour outside the lease, headed back, and blew a radiator hose. Luckily, it was around a town that I had a buddy in, and he was able to pick us up and take us to Abilene, and we were able to get a part and get it fixed. But that was about a 3-hour detour. But yeah, so far, it's been a nice place. A lot of wildlife on it. Aside from the little bit of the curse sticking to us, as far as vehicles, cameras. I mean, everybody's camera's been turned by cows or just something goofy happening. Which, if that's the worst thing that happens, that some cameras act up, okay, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
But so between that and just trying to gear up for duck season, we've been pretty busy. But we got this year, we went out and got licenses to hunt some public land around here locally. And me and Christian went out a few weekends ago to scout and stuff. And what do you think? How do you think it went?
I mean, I think it was pretty much as good as it could have been for the first time. You know, yeah. We pretty much came up with a game plan. We're like, okay, this is the spots that we can go, and this is what we can do. So that's what we did. You know, we get hunt with a shotgun only on this, you know, this area. And that's new to both of us, I would say, as far as doing strictly shotgun stands. Because if it's within, you know, any yardage, I'm usually shooting a rifle. I don't run a shotgun unless maybe it's like a really close fox stand, or, you know, maybe we're calling in some coons or something like that. But beyond that, I'm always rifle,
yeah,
pretty much. So it's a new experience, you know. I've shot one with a shotgun before, but and it was a fox, you know. But I never called coyotes with a shotgun. So yeah, it's a new experience.
Before, circle back a little bit. So what we did is we looked at Onyx and we figured out, okay, these are the areas we want to scout. But at the same time, we'd been itching to do some call-in. And
right,
we can't really use these properties for tournament hunting.
So it was like a duck scout gone predator hunt.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to make the best of it. Let's go shoot some coyotes and
right,
and do some scouting. Anyway, sorry.
No, I mean, it's kind of the same track I'm on. But either way, yeah. So I'm shooting out of this shotgun 3-inch two-shot tungsten rounds, which are made by Apex. Appreciate it, Adam. Anyways, so yeah. I didn't think anything of it. From what I had read as far as tungsten, you know, they're a little bit more dense than lead. And as far as penetration goes and the way they fly, it's supposed to be the round to use.
Yeah.
So I didn't think anything of it. Well, anyways, we pull up to this first spot. We're like, okay, kind of going up on a hill. We were kind of sitting down in elevation from where we expected them to come in. So it really wasn't the best spot, but with the setup that we had, it was kind of the best thing that we had, especially with the shotgun.
Yeah.
So like, all right, we're going to go ahead and try it here, see what happens, put the call out. I don't know, what you put it, like 40 yards probably?
Yeah.
Probably about the distance that we would want to, you know, take the shot.
Yeah.
40, 50 yards, pretty decent shot with a shotgun. So, I mean, we bust out the first stand, call in a coyote. It comes kind of where we thought he was going to come from, But what he did, I mean, he came busting out. We thought he was going to do it, like, right to the call.
Yeah.
And either, I mean, the wind was right in our favor. It was just one of those things he didn't really see what was going on, so he didn't have an interest to pursue further than where he felt comfortable. So he got out to about, I don't know, probably 90 yards or so, and kind of just looked around, turned around, and started trotting back to where he came in from. And at this point, you know, we're just lip squeaking, doing everything that we can to try to get him to come back. And, you know, he's just really not having it. So we kind of missed an opportunity on that one. We couldn't get a shot off just because of the distance, you know. Yeah. Didn't feel comfortable shooting that far. But for the first stand, calling it a coyote, I think it was at like 7:30.
Yeah. We got in there a little later than wanted, but...
But that night, it was... So we're hunting on a full moon. So typically, at least, you know, this is something that I picked up on and you picked up on too. When it's as bright as can be outside in the middle of the night, they tend to not want to move in the night as much just because they can be seen easier by prey, stuff like that. So they should be, you know, quote unquote, more active during the day, early morning hours, you know, late evening, stuff like that. So we were honestly thinking that we were set up for success, and we kind of were.
Yeah.
I mean, we only made 3 stands, but I'll continue that, you know, a little bit further here. So, yeah, I mean, we didn't get that one, unfortunately. We kind of were like, oh, we could have done this better. You know, we're always trying to look for something, critique ourselves on to be better. Because if we don't do that, then, you know, we're not getting better anyways. So it was more of like a learning experience, I would say, out there with shotguns and stuff like that in this area to begin with.
Yeah. And when we had set up, the one thing I told Christian, because so kind of a little more in-depth overview of this spot. We came off a road. There's a big hill to our right, and it opens up into this big, I mean, hundreds of acres of flat going down toward a creek. Well, the thick brush was on this hill, and then there was a little edge to our left, which would have been the east. Mm-hmm. Wind was blowing from the southeast?
I think it was, southeast
so
wind.
So it was blowing northwest.
Mm-hmm.
So basically where we came in from was was upwind. So we were already where we needed to be walking in. And that's why we hunted this spot first. We didn't want to drive through it, you know, disturb anything. And we knew looking at just the topography, if there was going to be a coyote there, it was going to be on that hill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as far as cover went and staying on the correct side of the wind, we had to sit on that lower sloped side, that lower elevation. And there was 2 spots of cover. There was an oak tree. And Christian originally pointed at that oak tree and said, hey, let's sit there. And honestly, if we'd have sat there, we might have been able to shoot him. I don't know. But what I was worried about is the road grade was so steep, I didn't think we'd be able to see up past it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one more little cut of brush back behind it, another probably 15 yards, and it flattened out. And I knew if I placed a call in a certain spot, if the coyote was to do what he should have done, he would have popped up right over top of that berm in that flat, and we'd have been able to shoot him. But I told Christian when we set up, I was like, if anything happens here, like if anything doesn't go right, it's going to be because of this hill, like this incline messing up the shot. Which honestly, I think had it been flat, we would have killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we'd had some motion. I've never been one to like really harp on motion, but the coyote, he had no idea we were there. He never winded us or nothing because he trotted back up the hill, stood there, looked around, yada, yada. If we'd had a rifle, he would have been dead 97 times.
Yeah.
I mean, we had plenty of shots on him with a rifle, just shotgunning. It wasn't exactly perfect. If the wind would have been from a different direction, we could have sat on the opposite side of the road and shot him on the road or something, but just the way it lined up, it didn't work out. But for first stand, I thought it was really good. And two, if you never called coyotes and having to think of how to kill them with a shotgun, it's a whole different ball game. It's not, you know, you pull up in a field, you can kind of play the wind, and just if they pop up 180, 200 yards, you can shoot them. I mean, you got to get them 50 yards or closer to kill them.
Yep.
So you got to think and you got to really play your cards right. And he did everything right except come over the next berm. And like I said, if we had sat at that original oak tree where Christian talked about, we might have shot him. I don't know. I think we would have had a better shot at him. But just the initial things we talked about when we were setting up is, hey, this is what will be the determining factor on this stand if we call one in.
Mm-hmm.
But then, anyways, on to the next stand.
Yeah, so we continued going east on this stand. Kind of went down, and so it's kind of a big steep hill. And I was looking for some of those areas on that hill that kind of flattened out in like a little plateau area kind of down from the hill where it would come in those draws. I was like, man, if we can get in one of those little open areas, that'd be great. But just, I mean, the grass when we walked out of the truck to try to go to this spot was probably like nipple high. I mean,
yeah, it was.
There's no walking through it. And, you know, we're wearing gear and stuff like that, but it just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So we continued, we went up on top of the hill. We got on top of the hill, it kind of flattened out like a little plateau almost.
Yep.
And we found kind of a little opening, still some cedars and some small little trees and saplings and stuff that were mixed in. And we're like, okay, we can sit up against one of these cedars, call against these tree lines in this little bowl area and kind of just get them in from anywhere. Well, we made the stand, initially ripped out the call, you know, 5 minutes, we're like, okay, there ain't nothing coming. 10 minutes, you know, there's lower hope at that point. And then when we get to about 15, we're like, okay, you know, that's, you know, that's about it for this spot. If they were here, they'd be here.
Yeah.
But we did have a hawk that was kind of checking us out the whole time, staying in a tree 50 yards out, just kind of staring at the call, trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah,
and that's something that we have a lot of times. I'm sure everybody else does, but predatory birds, you know, hawks, owls, falcons, all sorts of different birds will come into that call, and it's always cool to watch them.
Yeah.
Just kind of work on it.
Yeah, that and crows. And one thing that I do pay attention to when we're on a stand is crows, because a lot of times you'll call crows in and they'll be squawking, blah, 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 flying over you. But if you watch crows and if they're staying out at a distance and they're jumping like treetop to treetop and looking down, pay attention to that, because we've killed multiple predators that those crows are pointing out. Just like a squirrel. When a squirrel sees something coming in, they'll start barking. Mm-hmm. Crow will do the same thing. So always watch those birds. I mean, even if it's not, you know, if they're circling over top of you, okay, they're being crows. But like these two crows, they were in tops of trees. And like I said, we've killed multiple animals out from under crows before.
Yeah. I mean, I've even done that and keyed in on that when I'm deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start hearing them, you know, making their noise, squawking and stuff, and they're flying with something.
Yep.
You know, I kind of at the speed of something's walking or something's running, you know, they're like bullies. They just like to yell at everything they see.
Yep.
So it's kind of something that you can key in on and might help you in the future. I mean, it's helped us a few times, like we said.
Yeah, we've sat, you know, a couple extra minutes on a stand and we're able to kill off of that because of crows. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, okay, there might be something there. Let's give it a couple extra minutes. It's not going to hurt anything.
Yeah, you're never going to know what you haven't tried.
Yep. But so the second stand, you know, didn't call anything up. I don't know. It really wasn't windy or anything, so I don't think wind had anything to do with it. I just don't think anything was up there. Yeah,
I don't think there would have been in that area. I don't think there would have been a den close enough if they were denned up. If they were out roaming around, I just don't know if they would be necessarily like hunting in that area.
Yeah.
Just because of the way it was set up and the surrounding environment just looked better. It's just kind of one of those spots where we kind of just had to try it, see how it goes.
We were
it looked good, don't get me wrong, but everything surrounding it pointed to being a better spot to call.
Yeah.
In that circumstance.
In all honesty, it was more of a fox type spot anyway.
Yeah.
But so we moved on from there. Again, jumped back on Onyx. Looked for a couple spots and went back out to the north, cut back west, and started kind of heading back to the first spot we called. And we were going to cut through that big field we talked about, go back toward the creek. And as we were driving, we're just looking for spots. And like Christian said earlier, he was watching up on that ridge looking for flats. And he picked out a flat from probably 1,200 yards out that looked good. I mean, it was really the only open flat on the ridge, real thick, right above the creek. So a lot of stuff we could call back into. And so we parked, hiked in there on the way in. We flushed up some quail, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to get to it, but the creek had water right there. So we're like, dang, because we weren't wearing rubber boots or anything. And we weren't really set up to be just hiking in super far.
Yeah, no.
So we get to this first spot, and we're like, I don't know. So we just kind of followed the creek down. Eventually, we found a huge game trail, cattle trail, whatever.
Yeah.
And crossed the creek, come up, and it just, I mean, it was like perfect to put us into that little flat. Mm-hmm. Like, perfect trail to take us there, which was another good sign. I mean, having that much game flowing to the area we're going to.
It's a natural funnel coming off of that mountain.
Yeah.
That hill, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And kind of found, I mean, it was pretty sunny at this point. We really didn't have like a huge opportunity to call something in because it was getting later in the morning. I think it was like 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
10:30 maybe. Anyways, we found kind of like the front side of a pond dam, I guess is what it was really. Kind of where everything, all the water drained into one spot. And so we kind of pinpointed on that to get up a little bit higher, just kind of learning from that first stand. And it was hard to find cover to really sit up against in this situation. Everything was kind of dead. It looked like there had been a fire or something in that area at one point.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of dead cedars, you know, just a bunch of white.
Yeah.
So we're like, dude, we can't find a single spot to sit for what we wanted to, you know, because we can kind of pick out where those animals are going to come from.
Yeah.
You can kind of just imagine where they're going to come from just from doing it a few times, you know. So we're like, okay, well, we'll sit up in the shade and we'll kind of post up here and see what happens. There's a couple angles that, you know, wouldn't have been the best for the situation and whatnot, but we did what we could with what we had.
Yeah. Yeah, and where we sat, we kind of knew. So we sat on the north side of the little flat. Basically, we just set up on that trail leading up to that flat. And we knew by doing that, because it was so thick out to the front side of us to the east, that we were basically making pinch points for whatever we called in to come to.
Mm-hmm.
We just found a shaded spot on that hillside, tucked in that, and had a little bit of that deadfall back behind us to break us up. Just enough, because the coyote, like if we called anything in, it was going to be in there quick enough, it wasn't going to notice us. But we expected him to come down that trail either from our right, left, or honestly, from behind us around the little hump we were sitting on. And so Christian got up there, got set up. I put the call out. I cut it back to the northeast, kind of, I guess, to the wind, kind of.
Yeah.
And start running sound. And I think it was about the 9-minute mark. I run a very similar sequence all the time, unless I just know that a certain sound is working. But when it's early season and we're trying to just test stuff out, I kind of run similar sounds. There's two or three sounds I always run. And then if it's early season and I'm just trying to test a sound, my third or fourth sound, I'll normally kind of switch up. Well, the first stand, that coyote we called in was on the third sound on the switch. This coyote was on the switch on the third sound again. So they're about the same time, about that 8-9 minute mark. Because I switch sounds every 2.5-3 minutes. I mean, the second, probably 10 seconds after I switch the sounds to a sound that we call a lot of cats on, or call a lot of cats on, maybe not always kill them, but call a lot of cats on.
Mm-hmm.
I seen something cutting under the brush, and I thought it was a fox. And then he popped out from under the cedar, and I'd already told Christian where he was coming from, but he hadn't seen him yet until he hit that trail, and he started bouncing over top of the broom weeds, just boom, boom. I mean, beautiful, beautiful. If I'd had the camera at the right angle, it would have been a great, great shot.
Yeah.
Which is a whole nother deal that we found out, is trying to record coyotes on a stand is not the easiest thing. There's a lot of stuff to account for outside of just accounting for the stand setup. Now you got to think of camera angles too.
Yeah, camera equipment, microphones.
Yeah, a lot.
Firearms.
Just a lot of extra variables.
Calls. I mean, we're going in there like we're going in for a freaking elk hunt, and we're just calling in coyotes. But either way, that coyote, like Richard pointed out, he's like coming from the right. So I kind of had an idea of where he was going to come from, because he was running the call and he was running the camera at this point. And he was like, hey, I'll just let you take this on the, you know, you do the shooting on this one. It's like, okay. So he said he's coming from the right. And sure enough, you know, I see just a little glimpse of where he was coming. And thankfully, he stopped right on the other side of this tree that was blocking my way. And he just stopped for just a split second. And right when he stopped, I pulled up, fired the shot off, just dust, blew everywhere. You know, it looked like hair. It was just kind of like the grass that blew up, the broom weeds, you know, the tops of them. And looked like it dropped and rolled. And then I see him get up and run. I'm like, dude, there is no way. I mean, I put that, I wasn't even using the bead. The way I use a shotgun, no matter if I'm bird hunting or what I'm doing, I just use the barrel. You know, I keep both eyes open, put the barrel on what I want to hit, and that's all I've always done. It just seems faster that way, more natural for me. So anyways, I mean, I put the barrel right on his head, pulled the trigger, and we didn't end up with a coyote.
Yeah, somehow. And I mean, we've gone back and watched the video and stuff. He got hit.
Yeah.
So we repatterned that load, and it didn't put out a pattern that I necessarily like.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, I don't remember what choke I'm running. I know it's like an extra full coyote choke.
Yeah.
And it's really set up for those situations. And so is that round. But just coming out of my gun, coming out of that choke with that specific load, just really didn't pattern where I wanted it to.
Yeah. And I know for a fact it's a good load and stuff. And I know plenty of people that run it. And, I mean, I've seen people shoot coyotes through mesquite trees with it and kill them. But yeah, just better pattern.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you can't harp on any ammunition for anything, because your gun and you shoot different than any other gun and any other person.
Yeah, situation dependent.
You know, except for like expanding and stuff like that, and like the actual ballistics and stuff like that. But I mean, that, you know, that works. But accuracy is one of the bigger thing for me. If I can hit what I'm aiming at, that's what I'm going to use. You know what I'm saying? I want to, no matter if it's a shotgun or a rifle, I want to be as accurate as I possibly can. I want the best spread. I want the best pattern. I want, you know, I want to friggin' touch all three of my three-shot group if I can at 100.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of how it is. And if it's not, then I typically don't run it.
Yeah. Yeah, and before anybody says it, talking, I'm sure somebody will make a comment as to running number four buck or something like that. We run number four a lot, but where we're hunting, you cannot run any buckshot.
Yeah.
Or this specific place can't run buckshot. So we were running these tungsten loads.
Yeah, two shot.
And buckshot works good too, but I've had the same deal with buckshot. I mean, there's so many variables when you're coyote hunting. So many things can happen. And coyotes are extremely tough animals. But overall, I mean, just for pulling up on some spots and making some stands, we went, I call it 2 for 3. Yeah, we didn't kill 2 coyotes, but to be able to have 2 coyotes in shotgun range, situation dependent, that's pretty good. Just pulling up on a spot.
Yeah, so especially in like a training scenario, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, we're just going out there just essentially just scouting, really. I mean, scouting places to call, scouting places to bird hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But so we kind of, we finished up that stand. We looked for the coyote for a while. Didn't find anything. Like I said, repatterned that gun.
Yeah. Hold 30 seconds.
Yeah. It was longer than that.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, I don't know. Well, we made an effort. I mean,
yeah.
You definitely, not going to say that we didn't, you know. We try to retrieve anything that we possibly can, but that one was a lost cause.
Yeah. So we hiked back up to the truck, kind of tails between our legs, and then regrouped, and we went out and started looking at some tanks for birds.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably two of our favorite things to do, I would say, as far as hunting goes.
Yeah.
Is duck hunting, predator hunting. That's become, you know, kind of, we kind of swapped favorites in a way, but we still, we like love and have a passion for both of them. So I had never called anything in my life. Well, I take that back. I called one fox hen, and it was with like a $20 Academy special, you know, like, well, I don't even know what the brand is, but you know, just one of those cheap ones that only has like 5 sounds on it. Well, I called one in and ended up missing because I didn't know what I was doing. And anyways, so back on track. I hadn't called anything beyond that, and I've always wanted to, and then Richard kind of got me into that, and I was like, dude, this is freaking awesome. Ended up, like, blowing my whole salary on stuff just to do it, and then kind of vice versa with Richard. I took Richard duck hunting, and I don't know, I think the first time we did all right, and then I think it was the second time that we really just, probably one of the best duck hunts I've ever been on. We just destroyed them, and I think that's what really helped get him into it, because typically, you know, I'm not going to say that we're the best duck hunters in the world or we're the worst, but most of the time around here, you know, you just don't get those situations like that. It was kind of like a once in a year, once in a season kind of hunt.
Yeah.
And he had got to experience that in a second time. So, I mean, it'll get you hooked no matter who you are.
Yeah.
Really. But anyways, moving on to the tanks again. So we pulled up on this first one, and we're using Onyx for all this stuff. So we're kind of just look into where they could be and stuff like that. And then we're like, dude, I can't find. That was the one that we like couldn't find for a minute.
Yeah,
right?
It was hard to find.
Yeah, because it just the way the land was laid out, it just you couldn't really see a berm or anything specific. It looked like just a creek that was kind of tied in, and it really was. It was just a dammed up little dry weather, wet weather creek or wet weather creek. Anyways, we pulled up to that, nothing in it, infested with turtles. The banks looked like they were set up good for us to, you know, potentially build blinds and stuff like that. There was some brush that we could use, do that, all that good stuff. And it looked like it would have been in a good area for a fly lane because kind of out in the middle of an open field, sometimes ducks, they tend to key in on some of the spots. Sometimes they like more, you know, wooded, tight areas and stuff like that. It just depends on the duck.
Yeah.
Really depends on what specific kind of duck you're after. But either way, it looked good. It looked ducky.
Yeah, it looked real good.
We're like, okay, well, this is a good spot. Marked it on Onyx. And this is just one of the properties, or I shouldn't say properties, just one of the areas that we can go to out of many. But anyways, we went on to the next one. And I want to say, what was the second one that we went to?
Second one we looked at was...
I'd say it was like a smaller one,
yeah,
right?
It was a small tank that was dry.
Oh, yeah, it was the one off the road?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. That one probably not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
But then it was the third one that we went to.
Yeah.
And this is actually a pretty, I guess, sad, wild story, you could say.
Yeah.
Either way, we pull up to this, you know, big dam on it. We're like, man, this looks like it's probably a pretty good-sized tank.
Mm-hmm.
So we pull up over the tank dam. Sure enough, right on the edge, I mean, there's like six or seven ibis just sitting there, you know, in the shallows, just messing around. And then I look over and like, there's ducks right there, big ducks.
Mm-hmm.
I look down and what was there, five or six?
I think it was five. I think it was
there's four hens and
three
a drake.
Or four hens and one drake.
Yeah, so there's a pintail in there. I mean, you know, it looked like juvenile, or they're not even plumed at all yet. So
yeah.
It was kind of hard to tell. You couldn't really even tell what they were besides their bill and stuff like that, and just their size and their shape and stuff like that. But they were definitely pintail.
Yeah.
They got up and flew. We got some video of that, and you can see that on our pages too. And then I noticed when we pulled up over the tank, you know, the tank dam, I was like, dude, there's a deer sitting in the middle of the pond.
Yeah.
I mean, sure enough, she was just walking out there in like a foot of water, just sitting there. It looked like she was just drinking. You know, I didn't think nothing of it. So I was like, man, she's just getting some water. Cool. That's awesome. You know, she's not even scared of us, whatever. And I got on the binos and I was like, dude, there's something hanging from her, you know, her belly. It looked like, I don't even know, it was white. And I was like, man, it looks like some skin or something. I don't know what it is. Well, we get on the binos and I look a little bit more because at that point, I only saw it for a second. She was sitting in the water. I mean, almost fully submerged. Only thing that was not submerged was her back strap, her neck, and her head.
Yeah, and I didn't know this at first because, so we pulled up and like he said, she's out there standing in the water. And the first thing I did is I got the camera to try to get some video of these ducks. So I got the camera and I went down the bank and I'm tucked up under the trees and I'm just focused on these birds. And they flushed up and I got a good video of them and he called me and he's like, dude, that doe is laying in the water. And actually in the video, I missed it through the camera, but I got video of the ducks flying over top of her and you can see her head and she's laying down in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah, one of the craziest things I'd seen, I mean, I was like, dude, she looked like she got shot by something or she got hit. It was hard to tell. You know, we weren't very close. She was probably like 200, 300 yards out there. Didn't really have the best binos. Not like I had a spotting scope. I could see what was going on. Anyways, so she gets up and we're on the phone. We were trying to call the area to see what we were going to do about it. You know, we didn't really want to dispatch her. If we had to, we would have. We tried to get really the game warden over there and by that time, we were trying to get the game warden's phone number. And by that time, she already took off. And they were like, well, you know, good luck finding her. At that point, you're not going to find her. She's going to lay up somewhere, either die or, you know, I think she'll probably survive just based off of what I've seen. So what happened was it looked like, I don't know what it looked like, to be honest. But all I know is that her skin, pretty much from the back of her rib all the way to her hindquarter, was ripped off in a chunk, like midway up from her body all the way down to the seam of her belly. And it was just like ripped off and it was just hanging and she was kind of a little bloody and, you know, you could tell it was fresh. It probably happened that day or the day before that night.
At first we thought she had been gut shot or something, but
yeah.
When she got up before she ran off, I think more than anything, maybe she got hit by a car.
Yeah.
and just kind of road rash happened. But
yeah, it would have been a good guess, I would say.
Yeah, but it was pretty wild. I mean, definitely successful scouting as far as coyotes and ducks both go. I mean, to see ducks that time of year, because that was 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, we're talking.
Yeah, it was like first.
Early October.
First week
still.
Of October.
Yeah, to see a group of pintails down here then is pretty cool. And I think that probably says a lot about that specific area. And then this week we went out and looked at another spot out there too that looks really, really good. But that pretty much wrapped up the scouting and all that. As far as coyotes and ducks went, I thought it was pretty good. See birds here in October like that is good to see. Early October like that especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we stumbled upon a whole of them, but it's more than what we're used to right around now. You know,
yeah,
typically you'd see a few teal or something here and there, but to see big ducks here that early, it's always a good sign because last year we didn't really have a push at all.
Yeah,
because it was so hot, which I think this winter I think it's going to be a little bit colder.
Yeah, I think it'll be colder, and then too, well, and even this week it's kind of showing to be that way just with seeing some birds, but this little bit of rain coming in and stuff I think is going to help push some down. But I mean, the birds are moving. I think I'm hopeful it'll be a little better year than last year.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, more water is always good. Colder temperatures up north, always good for us. And then on top of that, getting rain before season, like we are, will flood out some of those areas that they can come in and get some fresh vegetation and whatnot and get some new stuff growing.
Yeah.
That way, that, you know, they'll have some fresh stuff for them to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, just some, you know, some stuff to kind of look forward to as far as content we're going to be putting out. We're going to be hammering on lease stuff, you know, whether it be deer, ducks, pigs, whatever. Some upcoming arrowhead stuff.
Yeah, just, so hopefully some points mixed in there.
Yeah. Yeah, we've not sure how much to talk about it yet, but through a friend of ours recently stumbled upon possibly some new stuff to bring some content through that should be really good.
Right.
And then we've got a couple guests lined up, Texas Cash being one of them. We don't have a set date yet, but we're going to have Texas Cash on here at some point. We've been working with him, talking with him a little bit. Another guy, I'm not going to say the name. It's a guest that we've had lined up a long time, just haven't set the date to do it. But that episode is going to be, I think, a really, really good one. I mean, it'll be,
yeah.
So far, Texas Diggers has been our best episode, and I think this one will probably surpass Texas Diggers.
Yeah, it should.
Love Mike and Quade, but I think this episode will be just a better episode. Not anything that episode wasn't good, just this is going to be a fantastic episode.
Right, and I mean, gain a little bit more of a listening now, so I mean,
yeah.
Statistically, it should be.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Well, we're better set up to record this episode. I mean, if we had everything set up the way we do now when we recorded Texas Diggers, and we're going to record another one with them at some point, and it'll be excellent too. But this episode we're specifically talking about should be fantastic. We've been talking with an archaeologist as well, so just kind of keep the arrowheads in the loop.
Yeah.
It is probably going to get a little more hunting heavy, but we're going to try to stick with that plan that we've set all along, you know, at least one artifact episode per month with the hunting stuff.
Right.
The schedule with the holidays coming up and stuff, it's going to be different, but we're still sticking to the trying to get y'all an episode every 2 weeks. I know we delayed this one, but it's just the way scheduling worked out with us and personal life. It was best that we took a break for a week to bring y'all this episode and do it right.
Right.
Rather than just throw something together and give y'all something that we're not proud to put out.
Right.
But as far as arrowheads go, we've got content lining up with that. Hopefully going to be some great stuff. And we've talked with a few other guys as far as ducks and stuff go. We'll have plenty of duck content. We're going to have Dancing Dogs on at some point. We'll talk with them. That'll be kind of hunting related stuff, some kind of business stuff as well.
Right.
Just a few things that are going on behind the scenes to bring y'all some content. And like we said the other day in a post, you know, we're trying to finish out the year strong and have some really good stuff lining up for the new year. we're going to focus more the ducks and deer and all that right now. And then come New Year, we'll push into predator hunting.
Right.
But still sticking with the artifacts, too. And so, really, I mean, my only question for our viewers right now is, what do y'all want to hear from us? And I know we post polls and stuff like that on Facebook, but, you know, wherever you're watching, if you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening to this, whatever, you know, follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We've already said all that. But we don't have those pages just so y'all can follow us and, you know, we build a following.
Yeah.
We have those pages for y'all to interact because we want to know what y'all want to see, what y'all want to hear, things like that. Like the whole point of this is it's a community.
Right.
We all share hobbies. We want to know what y'all want to see, what y'all want to hear, people y'all want to see us try to go and get. I mean, we've got a long list of people that Christian and I are happy to talk with. And, I mean, we can bring on a guest every day if we really wanted to.
Right.
But we want to bring quality content that y'all want to hear, that y'all want to see, stuff that will get y'all exciting and spark good conversation.
Right.
But kind of got off on a little tangent there.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, we're not going to know what y'all want to hear without y'all telling us what you want to hear. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we have no guidance, which we have a set thing that, you know, we kind of have an idea of what y'all want to hear. You know, we have already a bunch of guests lined up, but, you know, in all reality, we're willing to sacrifice a few of those options to give what y'all want to hear. Because at the end of the day, y'all are the one that are going to support us.
Yeah.
It's a community, like Richard's saying. So, you know, just give us some feedback, give some engagement on our pages. That way, you know, we know where we need to go next with this.
Yeah, I mean, if y'all want to hear 5 Arrowhead podcasts in a row, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the way we're structuring it right now is we're just kind of going seasonally. And right now we're in hunting season, so we're kind of pushing the hunting stuff. But come spring and summertime, we're going to have tons and tons of Arrowhead content is the plan.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like Starbucks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pumpkin spice time, so that's all you're going to see is pumpkin spice.
Nothing
and then
better.
When it comes summer, all you get is refreshers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we're going to go by what's the end thing.
Christian knows about Starbucks.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I have to go there and spend $10 every time I go, and that's just for one person, not myself. So, and I got to write down the order.
I was going to say, do you know the order?
I mean, sometimes.
Yeah. It depends on
the day. It depends on the week. Because you never know. They might have came out with the pumpkin spice something else.
Depends on the season.
Right.
Pumpkin spice chai tea latte with 97,000 pumps of vanilla. That's a topic to discuss at some point. Where the hell did they come up with the amount of pumps of any kind of additive in these drinks?
Well, I actually used to work at the movie theater and to make drinks like this, so I kind of understand. It's just really to make the sweetness level and the...
I get
the taste of it.
Thinking behind it, but what the hell is the difference in 7 pumps versus 8 pumps?
Yeah, I don't really
know. As far
as I guess it's just like the amount of sugar packets you put in your tea or your coffee.
I don't know. Just some people's orders, I'm like, golly. My mom is literally the person I'm talking about.
No, I'm talking about like temperature. That's where it gets me. Like, I want it kid cold or I want it kid hot. Like, what does that even mean?
I don't know.
That's like 98.6 degrees.
Anyways,
either way, yeah.
Yeah, that was a rabbit hole on its own.
Yeah, so like we're saying, you know, keeping it seasonal. We know y'all want to strive for more of the artifact stuff, and that's kind of what we lean to as well, more towards trying to release. That's why we're trying to release at least one of those a month. So we're going to continue with that, make sure that y'all get everything that you want to hear. And, you know, once again, let us know, and we will give y'all what you want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, and two, I mean, there at the beginning, me and Christian did a bunch of episodes, just us, with guests mixed in. If y'all want to see us doing more one-on-ones every now and then, or, you know, every few episodes, that's kind of the plan, is we'll do some hunting stuff, artifact stuff, and then kind of these recap episodes where we're either telling y'all kind of overviews of what we've been doing that y'all aren't seeing, or what we're planning to do, things like that, or just telling stories. But we need y'all's input. We need y'all to share. You know, the community's growing. We literally have had people texting us saying that the deal's blowing up as we're doing this. I don't know if I would say it's blowing up, but we're reaching people, and I'm glad to see the community is growing, and we really do appreciate everybody that has listened and has supported engaged in this. Because we don't do it just to hear ourselves talk or just sit here and talk to each other, because we talk to each other 12 hours a day already.
Yeah.
But as far as that goes, I think we're kind of to that point. Again, we appreciate y'all. You know, please keep liking, sharing, subscribing, whatever that may be. The YouTube is up. It's slower posting than Instagram and all that stuff, just because we've got to edit videos and we're kind of building the content as we go. But we've got some videos up. One of them has done really well, and I'm honestly, this is something y'all can respond to as well. I've got a bunch of old digging videos. I can put together a montage of digging videos or stuff like that, or I can keep posting them as shorts. However, if y'all would rather see it as one big long format video, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to hear y'all's input on that. But as far as that goes, you know, again, just engage with us. Let us know what y'all are wanting to hear. But we hope y'all enjoyed this one. And
yeah, make sure you keep living your hobbies.
All right, guys. We'll see y'all later.